I'm Goldie Sayers and welcome to the EIS Insider, the podcast from the English Institute of Sport that lifts the lid on the science behind peak performance. If you're new to this show, welcome along. If you've missed any of our previous episodes, they're all available for free wherever you get your podcasts. So far this series, we've talked about how to eat, train and think like a champion. But today we're talking about coping with the so-called come down after a big event in your life. And for elite athletes, that's often a major championships. In Olympic sport, we call it the post-games blues. It's a feeling I know only too well, having competed in three Olympics myself. And I suspect many athletes who went to Tokyo last summer will be sharing my experience. Win or lose, it can take time to come to terms with the end of years of hard work. And the temptation might be to keep going, especially with the games in Paris just 2 years away. But in this episode, we're going to find out about the importance of stepping back and how slowing down can ultimately make you go faster. Thanks to everyone who's been in touch about the series so far. We've had this message from Kerry who says, "My daughter is a high-level gymnast and I've taken lots away from this podcast, especially that the food you eat the day before a competition is more important than what you eat on the day itself. Can't wait for the next episode." Thanks, Kerry. And if, like Kerry, you'd like to get in touch, send us a message via social media at EIS2Win. That's EIS, number two, win. Or why don't you rate and review our podcast wherever you're listening to us? By the way, make sure you stay tuned until the end of this episode because we'll be hearing from the EIS and its partner, Premier Global NASM, and how they're helping to train the health and fitness professionals of the future. But before all of that, let me introduce you to two experts from the EIS's Performance Lifestyle team who've been working with athletes since their return from Tokyo to help them overcome the post-games blues. It's a warm welcome to Ben Quilter and Arabella Ashfield. Arabella, hello.
Hello, Golding.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you do within the EIS?
Well, as you say, I'm a member of the Performance Lifestyle team. We aim to support athletes through their whole career and the world-class program from when they enter onto it and as they kind of transition through the various different points of being an athlete, and then also support them in their future careers and aim to kind of support their well-being throughout, but also then look to their futures as well and support them as they transition off the program.
And Ben, how do you work with Arabella in the Performance Lifestyle team?
I do exactly the same as Arabella. We both work in cycling, so we just look after different squads with the cycling team being so big. We've just got different squads that in way in which we've divided it up, but we work in exactly the same ways.
And Ben, you're a very successful Paralympian at judo. Do you remember this idea of post-game blues? I mean, you obviously went to Beijing and you went to London as well and obviously won a bronze medal there. Did you experience a kind of post-games blues?
Yes and no. I think post Beijing, I was young and I was youngish and enthusiastic, and it hadn't gone quite the way I'd hoped. I'd finished fifth, which is the worst possible position to finish in a sport like judo, because there's obviously two bronzes and two fifth places. It was straight back to the drawing board for me, and I kind of saw myself having 4 years to really make up some ground technically and kind of be where I needed to be for the next cycle. I kind of processed the emotions, I think, and went through that spell and bounced back pretty quickly with a kind of a renewed enthusiasm to get back straight back on the mat and make those gains. But after London, it was completely different. I went into London with a significant knee injury and plans to get married 6 weeks afterwards. Then I had to squeeze in a honeymoon and a knee operation. So it was a hectic time for me immediately post London. But I would definitely say kind of, I do remember there's a time when I remember kind of having got married, been on a 3 week holiday to Australia, come home, had my knee operated on, and I was sitting in my flat in Dartford. It was snowing outside and I was trying to work out how I was going to take the dog for a walk on crutches. And then that was kind of probably that low point for me, starting to think, right, now what do I do? So yeah, that was definitely a difficult spell for me. People come back, they throw themselves into something or they don't, and that's when they struggle. And I think it comes, but it just possibly comes at different periods for different people.
And has it helped being an ex-athlete with the work you do now as a performance lifestyle advisor?
Yeah, I think it does. I think over time I've kind of learned not to apply my experiences and you know how it unfolded for me because everyone's so very different. But yeah, no, I can relate to a lot of the things people talk about. I think sometimes, you know, sharing some of the things that I went through, and I've been asked a few times by riders or other athletes. So you retired. How did you know it was the right time to retire? Which is a really difficult question to answer, and I always try and answer it with a question, which I'm sure is really frustrating for them. But it does give me a kind of a unique insight and an idea as to what maybe they're experiencing or some of the emotions that they're going through. But yeah, I think it's useful to have done that.
And when did you know it was time to retire? And I remember, certainly for me, I just the thought of going back in the gym or training again, I just knew that it was, I knew, you do, you kind of, I always say to people, you just know.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was just about to say, how did you know it was time to retire? But it changed for me. I kind of didn't enjoy winning anymore, but I still hated losing. So the enjoyment had totally gone out of it for me. And then I remember sitting there thinking about the next 4 years and doing it all again and whether the time was right. And I remember having sort of discussions about me getting older and having injury after injury after injury. And at 31, as a lightweight judo player, you're kind of reaching the end of your shelf life. So I was having discussions about how we might modify my training in order to keep me going for another 4 years. And I thought at that point, maybe it's time to think about something different. But I've definitely had my moments over the last 6 or 7 years where I felt like maybe I could come back and do it all again. But that's just my enthusiasm getting the better of me, I think.
and Arabella, from what Ben said about his days as an athlete, maybe post-Beijing, his first games, where he was really eager to get back into training, how do you have a conversation with an athlete who's, you know, desperate to start again and get back onto the treadmill straight away? How do you have that conversation with them about slowing down and maybe taking a step back to reflect before going again?
I think it's probably a bit of a process sometimes. I think, you know, people are really keen to get back in the gym, like you say, and to get doing the miles or doing the lengths in the pool or what have you. And I think sometimes it's just taking that moment to stop and ask other questions around their lives. So, you know, how did you spend those first few days, weeks after you've got back? Something that we've done is to check in with people just after they returned from the games, because we felt it was quite important this time around, with the fact that they haven't had family out there. They've not had that experience that, though every games is very different and, you know, it's a big hype around it, it was different this time round. And because the lead-in has been very different this time round, we were conscious that we wanted to check how people were. And therefore that gave us that opportunity to just sort of sense check, how are you? And let people feedback about, yeah, I'm catching up with people or I'm seeing friends and family. And that was great. I don't think I heard too much of people saying, I'm desperate to get back in. I think it was more kind of, I'm just doing this the next couple of weeks. You know, people that maybe plan, I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to be doing this. And then, yeah, I'll be back looking forward to this. But others kind of just, yeah, have got plans, have made plans for this period of time. And then others are kind of keen to get back in. And I think you often then see a difference, like Ben was alluding to, like where you're at in your career. So Ben had done his second games at that point. And for him, maybe like he'd put that effort in before it. Others, maybe it's their first games and they're like, wow, I've done my first games and I'm ready to go again. We're talking about sort of people in their very early 20s that have medaled and they're ready to hit it again. And that's okay as well. I think it's just trying to kind of find what's right for that person.
Can there be a bit of a danger though with this Olympic cycle that's obviously a lot shorter leading into Paris 2024? It's obviously a 3-year cycle as opposed to a 4-year or 5-year in the case of Tokyo. Ben, do you see that there is a danger with some athletes wanting to get straight back in without any kind of break or rest, or a bit people a bit more level-headed these days?
I think it's more about the length of the previous cycle. Some people have really struggled with that 5-year cycle and the thought of jumping straight back into to another one, which is shorter without a proper rest, is a real kind of scary one for some people. Whereas others are maybe weren't expecting to go to Tokyo, or Tokyo's kind of came at a later point whereby it's given them the opportunity to perform better than they would have done if it was a year earlier, in which case, you know, they're now kind of been catapulted a year ahead with a lot more confidence and a lot more kind of experience in a short period. You know, the role that we're playing, and the psychology team and coaches and the support staff are all playing here, is making sure that these conversations are being had. And I think that's the key thing, is actually acknowledging it and ensuring that everyone's on the same page and having these conversations. And it's okay for one person to say, I'm absolutely flying, and, you know, I've had 2 weeks off, that's enough, I'm ready to go. Or somebody, you know, whereas somebody else is thinking more along the lines of 4 months, 3 months, you know, really need to just stop, you know, think about a few things, process a few emotions, reflect on the last 5 years before I'm even ready to consider Paris. So, yeah, I think the shortened cycle is going to work really well for others, and it's going to be a bit of a hindrance to others. A bit like the longer previous cycle was exactly the same. So it's really interesting, and obviously not somewhere we've ever been before. So it's good to kind of sit back and kind of see it from different angles and different perspectives, and allow people to kind of navigate that and find out what's going to be the best solution for them.
And obviously you guys are working in a very successful sport, cycling. Do you find that people struggle with different things post games, whether they've been very, very successful, which obviously many of the athletes that you work with have been at Olympic Games, compared with those who've perhaps not performed as well as they'd like to?
You know, being in a very successful sport, I think, brings with it challenges. You know, people maybe have expectations of themselves, but also, you know, athletes work very hard to sort of situate themselves in that, to see what they are capable of and doing their best, and to trust in that process and to deliver what they can deliver. And also recognizing that, you know, when you're on a bike, on a track, it isn't all, you know, completely, you know, isn't all your in your control. So, you know, how you respond to those other people in the middle of a race on a track, you know, you can only do your best. So I think it can vary. Ben, what would your thoughts be on that?
Yeah, I'd agree. I very much, as an athlete, got caught up in defining myself by my success or lack of, and depending on the outcome of any given event, and probably wasn't a good place to be, because it's difficult to then feel satisfied. So I think that's why the more subtle work that we do with people on a more regular basis is really important, making sure that athletes aren't sort of fully consumed by this constant output and kind of definition of themselves based on winning and losing and success on the larger scale. So I think you definitely do see people going through different levels of challenge and managing it in different ways. But again, the diverse nature of the athlete group that we've got makes it really interesting to, you know, to go from one conversation to the next, where, you know, some people have been mega successful and still probably aren't feeling that satisfied, and others, you know, deem themselves as not maybe succeeding or having performed as well as they might well have, you know, might like to have done, and therefore kind of having to battle through that and work out what, you know, process all those emotions and how they're feeling and whether they want to carry on. So yeah, no, it's definitely a really interesting dynamic, and one that's not always that straightforward, but useful to kind of chat through.
When Ben was talking there about how people perceive themselves with their successes and their career, I have supported people in the past, you know, highly, highly successful, you know, really, really successful individuals who have needed to take that time to acknowledge their successes, because that can get lost in when you're always trying to pursue something that's coming down the road, or actually I'm moving on from this. Taking the time to reflect, look back, acknowledge those were some phenomenal achievements, and actually, yes, it's a nice new exciting chapter that someone may be moving on to, but also just taking that time to see what someone has achieved and how exciting that can be, to look back and be proud of what they've achieved. And I think sometimes in a very, very successful sport, there's more chance of that, because, you know, maybe you've only come home with one Olympic cold metal, whereas next to, as we well know, we've got some you know, the world's some of the best Olympic hall in of all time, I guess. And I think that brings with it maybe some people going, crikey, quite achievement. I think you've done pretty well, you know. So taking that time to just enjoy that and acknowledge their own achievements, I think I believe that's really important. But also they've needed to take that time, and I've facilitated people through that, which has been a real, you know, it's been a real pleasure to do that, and an honour to do it, really.
So, Arabella, you've talked about how important it is for us all to take time to reflect on what we've achieved. So, say I was someone from your sport, cycling. Laura Kenny, say, coming back from Tokyo with yet another gold medal, having had this amazing career, how would I go about acknowledging that success?
For me, when I've worked with people, it's been about looking at how they remember things, so reflecting on kind of the experience that they've had. And that would probably be a starting point for a lot of performance lifestyle advisors, is to listen to the stories that they have. But then there are a variety of tools and techniques that we can use that's kind of underpinned by our coaching techniques. So we can sit and we can kind of plot out what their career highlights were. I've liked doing a lot of in the past around kind of writing narratives and writing stories about their own experiences, using images to do that, collecting images that mean something to people. And it isn't always the image of a medal around the neck. It can be something else. So when people are kind of just trying to get their head around that, there are really nice and creative ways of doing that. But you're often starting with that conversation to say, well, tell me what you're thinking and feeling about it. And what does that mean to you? And that's where you get the opportunity to ask some quite potentially sometimes challenging questions for that individual, because they haven't taken that time to sit there. And most people, friends and families, will tell you what you want to hear. So actually, and sometimes it's just about sort of questioning a little bit deeper, and how you then go about that could be a variety, you know, myriad of different ways. But I think, yeah, there's certainly that process of listening and then kind of following that through with different ideas is a nice way to do it.
And Ben, you've mentioned, you know, some athletes will be thinking about, right, getting stuck back into the next Olympic cycle, but there will be those who are thinking about transitioning out of sport and perhaps retiring. How do you work with those athletes, and what sorts of conversations will you have with them?
I think there's a lot of reflecting, you know, it's a real good and important period to kind of stop and reflect. And I think touching on what Arabella was talking about then and what you mentioned about kind of success is, there's something I didn't really do as my career progressed. I never really stopped and thought about what the success was or wasn't. And actually the highlights for me wasn't necessarily the medals. It was more about achieving my own personal goals and the memories I made, the people that I met, and, you know, all of those other experiences. And I quite often use the phrase, it's just a bit of metal on a string, and I, you know, that's what drives us in that moment. But actually, yeah, you know, when it's all said and done, it's all about that experience. It's a good opportunity to kind of stop and really chat through some of those things. You find that some people at that point just think, yeah, you know what, it's been amazing and I've absolutely loved it, And now's the time to step away. Whereas other people think, maybe I want more. Maybe there's more there. Maybe there's, you know, I'm not ready to call it a day just yet. So it's really just about, you know, with any major decision, whether it's retiring or whether it's taking on a university degree or looking to get a part time job or whatever the large life decision is that you're kind of contemplating, is around kind of just really exploring the pros and the cons and what might, you know, what the implications might be of that. And, you know, is it the right time now? So it can leave you feeling a little bit confused. And I think that the key is not to rush that, and to just really, you know, take your time and work through it. And I think the more you do that and the more you articulate it to somebody else, the more you kind of take it away and have conversations with those around you and those friends and family and get different perspectives, you know, you start to make sense of it all. You also start to get more and more confused, but you get there in the end. And I think just kind of guiding people through that process is quite an exciting place to be, especially with a rider that's, you know, then excited about the next chapter, or, you know, any athlete that's excited about the next chapter and what might be.
And obviously, you know, there's a lot of parallels with perhaps other careers, you know, elite sports people people we tend to in society, I guess, get very wrapped up in our careers, or when we're introduced, people might say, I'm such and such and I'm a doctor or a dentist or a lawyer, whatever it might be. What tools and tips would you give to everybody in order to, when they've finished a big project or a big piece of work, or perhaps are even retiring from their job, what can they do that can be applied from sport?
I often find when talking to people, there's the kind of practical and the emotional level to it. So how someone's kind of thinking about that and feeling about it, and how they want to move on or choose to stay involved in some way, or choose to occupy themselves because they know they're that type of person. There's that layer of knowing themselves a bit better, or getting people who do know you well enough to be able to kind of just reflect that back at you a little bit, so that you can sort of say, actually, am I somebody that needs to have something else in my life that's going to provide me with a bit of stimulus to do, or can I be involved in other things? And then there's that kind of actually doing the practical bits of, well, would I want to go out and do extra stuff and kind of get involved in different activities, and but knowing how you feel about it, as well as then what you might do about it, and kind of coming to thoughts about both of those, and I guess reconnecting as well a little bit around friends, family, taking the time just to stop and to revisit. And that is quite a difficult thing when you're going through a transition, is to be able to not push on and to recognize that in yourself, and whether you can see it, and then be able to just to take a pause and to do something different. And know who's going to support you along that journey, I think, is a key thing for anybody at that stage. Like, who are the people that are going to, that you trust? So if I have conversations with athletes, and this would apply to anybody, who do you trust to have that conversation with, to be able to support you around kind of if you're struggling, or if you're not, or you want to do something different, you want to go and just go for a walk and those sorts of things, they're the people that are going to give you that support when you need it. Ben, what would your thoughts be?
Yeah, similar, I think. You know, I think as elite athletes, you know, the parallels are that you never do it on your own. You know, there's always somebody there supporting you, coach, support team, the background support from the wider program, your friends and family. You know, it's a real team effort, even in an individual sport. So I think just, you know, when you transfer out sport or in everyday life, you know, just using the support of those around you to help you in difficult times, and identifying who's good at supporting you for different aspects, different elements of wherever you are. I think as well, one of the things I was urging all of the athletes to do as they're heading into Tokyo is just to enjoy it. If you can, you know, stick your head up and have a look around and make sure that you take it all in, because it does pass you by, and you do find yourself kind of really wrapped up and caught up in it. And again, I think that kind of transpires as well into the working world. You know, it's really important just to be able to stop and have a look around you and see what's going on and appreciate what it is, and just make sure that there's some fun attached to it, and that you are enjoying what you're doing. Yeah, and I think, again, without going on too much about the reflection piece, one of the most helpful things I did when I retired, whilst I was kind of looking into what next, and a real practical thing was just to write it all down, just to you know, write everything down, how I was feeling, make some notes, think about what was missing, what things I needed, you know, what would add value or add elements or aspects to my life, which, you know, which would make me happier or make me enjoy, you know, what I was doing, or get me from one place to the next. So yeah, just using your strengths and also kind of making sure that you're aware of your weaknesses and getting stuff out of your mind and trying to make sense of it that way.
I think that's a good way of knowing yourself as well. So if you can, through that process, begin to learn a bit about what you're like as a person. So, you know, if you are coming away from a large project, and actually what gives me that energy, what's going to refresh me or renew me, is it time in a quiet space, is it time with friends and family? And if you're beginning to think about that, when, okay, actually, what is it, if I was going into retirement, what is it that I'm going to miss, or I'm going to move away from this, is it that social interaction? And therefore, do I need to make sure that actually planning ahead is to introduce a bit of that at some point? But you've got to know yourself well enough to be able to highlight that as something to add in. So is it that actually I need to spend more time out in the open? Actually, my physical health is really important, and being able to that helps me mentally if I am doing X, Y, and Z physically, for example. But, you know, and spending time with children or with their children or something like that might be really key to go, yeah, actually, this is what's meaningful, and enjoying that time together. So if through that process of writing or having conversations with people that you wouldn't necessarily always speak to, it might prompt that, sort of allow somebody to think a little bit more about themselves and learn about themselves to then know how to cope with what might be coming.
So if somebody did lack a bit of self-awareness in order to really get the most out of that reflection process, what would you recommend that they do to be more self-aware?
I think there's conversations with people that you trust, that you would be happy to hear that critical feedback. I think if you want to go into thinking about, well, do I need to learn a bit more about myself? You've got to have that sort of approach. Don't ask the question if you're not prepared for the answer. So, you know, you've got to then think, well, okay, if I want to be able to receive some feedback about it, then you've got to be able to prepare for that. So actually, you know, asking someone that you trust, well, what do you think that I would be good at? What do you think I'm going to struggle with? And then that might be just allow you enough sort of time or bit of insight to be able to piece a few things together. And equally, you know, sometimes we can't prepare for everything. So sometimes you've got to trial something. You've got to give it a go, see whether it works, and learn from that experience. But it is taking that time to kind of just try and experience it and think about it as it's going along as well.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think you touched on it there, Arabella. It's like don't afraid to be challenged and have some difficult questions asked of you. I think again you find in a lot of sports people, and I can definitely reflect on this myself. I was my own worst critic. You know, I was always kind of seeking perfection, and sometimes it wasn't always required. But sometimes those habits, whilst they're really useful as an athlete, they can become a bit detrimental in normal life or in other aspects. So just, you know, have someone around you that will pose those difficult questions, and you know, you might not always want to think about them, but often if you're struggling for one reason or another, it's usually those questions you don't want to answer that you probably need to.
Me too. Fantastic. So where can we find out a bit more about the work that you guys do, or perhaps the stuff around decompression or even transition or retirement?
So a lot of what we're kind of doing is kind of obviously involved with the sports, but we have a campaign called More to Me, which you'll see on social media channels. So across lots of things that the IS will put out. And that really showcases some of the stories that we'll hear from athletes and occasionally from practitioners as well, just to show how our athletes are kind of embracing lots of different things around just being an athlete. And obviously we want to promote being able to do that because we can see the variety of benefits that it has for people across their lives and across being an athlete, not just into their future as well. So hashtag More to Me. If you follow that on any of the social media outlets, you will come across features of the work that we're doing, and some really nice sort of insights from some of the athletes as well that have really embarked on that.
And have you seen that, Ben, as well? Have you worked with lots of athletes that, you know, doing other things has really benefited their performance?
Yeah, definitely. I think as you well know, Goldie, it's sometimes the life of an elite athlete isn't as glamorous as it looks on the telly kind of every 12 months or every 4 years. So I think the reality is it can actually become quite monotonous. And, you know, when you're trying to squeeze out an extra 1 or 2% or sometimes even 0.5% in order to improve your performance to make the difference between, you know, fifth place or first place, it becomes really, really intense and really, really monotonous. And I can definitely relate to that myself. There's only so many times you can get thrown, get up or throw someone and just keep doing the same thing over and over again, fine-tuning some really subtle techniques and you know, lifting the same weights in the same gym and all the rest of it, watching what you eat to make a weight class. So all of those things can actually can play quite a big part in just, you know, grinding you down to an extent. You know, you're still motivated and driven to do them because ultimately the end goal is why you do what you do. But for me, for sure, I think I needed something else in my life to kind of give me that outlet or that different challenge. And for most of my career, that was kind of studying part time. I did an undergraduate degree and then a master's degree, and just being around different people in a different environment, challenging myself in a different way, kind of gave me that outlet. Some of the athletes that I've worked with over the years have, you know, whether it's writing a blog about something completely unrelated to their sport, or doing an online course, or just, you know, thinking about what their future might be. And I think it's kind of having that open-minded approach that, again, you know, at the beginning of my sporting journey, I wasn't thinking about what I was going to be doing at the end, but actually there were probably some things that you could do at that stage of the journey which may help the end become a bit clearer, but you don't necessarily need to be worrying about the end of your career right at the beginning. But you can probably embark on some stuff that will kind of spark an interest or kind of just, you know, brighten up your day a little bit when you're trying to motivate yourself to get out on a bike in the rain or put on a horrible, sweaty, stinking judo suit and do it all again. So, yeah, just doing things which either give you something that you're in, you know, improve your life by doing something you're interested in or actually improve your future employment opportunities in the long run. So yeah, 100%. It's as good a positive distraction as it is anything. And I think we often find that can actually have a positive performance impact if it's done correctly.
And very off topic, how often do you wash your judo suit then?
Not very often anymore because I don't wear it so frequently as I used to. But I used to wear it probably quicker than I could wash it, if in all honesty.
So there we have it. From the secrets of the judo laundry to how to successfully reflect and move on from a major event or project. Some tips we can all take from elite sport back to our everyday lives. And if you're thinking about making a change in your career, then stay tuned until the end of the podcast, as we'll be hearing from one of the EIS partners who are helping to train the next generation of fitness professionals. If you want to continue the conversation about anything we've discussed in today's episode, you can get in touch on social media at EIS2Win. And don't forget to check out our website and YouTube channel for more great content from the English Institute of Sport. Coming up next time on the EIS Insider, we'll be talking about failure and why sometimes we can learn more in defeat than in victory. That's on the way in the next episode of the EIS Insider. Speak to you then.
Hello, my name is Marcia Bailey, and I am a performance lifestyle technical lead at the English Institute of Sport. I'm excited to be joined by Susie Brough from the Premier Global NASM, who are the EIS's preferred personal training supplier. Hi, Susie, how are you?
Hello, Marcia. Lovely to see you again.
Firstly, can you tell us a bit about Premier Global, your role there and what the organisation does?
I certainly can. You might have to stop me because I get very passionate about all of this. So I'm the Head of Business Development for Premier Global NASM. And what my role basically is, I get to speak to amazing partners such as yourselves, the English Institute of Sport, about the best way to support and engage and educate members or staff or athletes using our live learning for digital technology to train people to become simply awesome fitness professionals. So we have over 50 years combined experience developing leading health and fitness professionals. We sort of pride ourselves on understanding better than anyone what it takes to succeed. And we very much believe that, you know, the best personal trainers do more than just getting people fit. They help others to overcome hurdles, to reach goals, and to inspire people to achieve more. And I guess, really importantly, they have a massive impact on others. We continually aim to raise the standards in our industry. So we've partnered with the National Academy of Sports Medicine, NASM for short, which is the leading personal training authority in the USA, to set new benchmarks in fitness qualifications. We really do believe that we are, you know, absolutely the best at transforming students' lives, people's lives, and more importantly, being very passionate about fitness and how that can basically enrich people and help people to have a much better and fulfilling life. I'm going to stop now, otherwise I'll go on and on and on.
I mean, the partnership we've had has been absolutely fantastic. But I know from the athlete's perspective, you have transformed their lives. We have had so many athletes that have been able to really kickstart their career through Premier Global NASM. You know, many of them have gone on to set up their own personal training companies. Many of them have used the additional courses to really specialise in things like antenatal and prenatal care. And they can either do the courses while they're on the World Class programme, or as they're transitioning off, it can be a real foundation for them to start their career. So it's been fantastic working with you. Susie, can you tell us, how does Premier Global support the performance lifestyle team?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question, actually. So as you know, we've kind of met all of the guys on your team, who are all lovely, by the way. And I think right even before we even are introduced to the athlete, we do as much as we can as a team to find out about that person, what they're looking to do, what they, you know, what they have been doing from a sports perspective. And we try to understand and engage with them really, really early on. We offer that one-to-one support as well. And from an end goal perspective, I think what really is important to say here is that athletes have got so many skills, so many attributes that are required to be a personal trainer. That is why it's just a really good natural follow-on from being an athlete and then looking to take that career on into being a fitness professional, whatever that may be, a strength and conditioning coach, a pre and postnatal coach, whatever that is. There's lots of things that probably the athletes don't even realise themselves they've been kind of doing, the way they've been coached, that they can literally take that experience on and then go and help other people and to inspire them and to become fitness professionals. We have a very collaborative approach with you guys, which I think is very, very important. And it's not just a question of, you know, your guys come over to us, we train them and they're gone. We really look after them afterwards as well, making sure that they've got anything they need from a business perspective. I can help them find jobs if they're looking to, you know, go into a particular gym, whatever is needed. So I think that is really important for anyone that is listening, that is part of the EIS, that you know, there is absolutely support, obviously from you guys, from lifestyle coaches, but also from us. We don't see this as a you know, just a one stop shop, if that makes sense. It's very much an ongoing support. And you mentioned about the continued professional development. I mean, that is something that's very, very key in terms of helping the athletes decide where they want to take their careers. So very pleased that we can do that and offer that, Marcia.
No, definitely. And I can definitely reiterate that for us, it's been a really highly successful partnership. Well, Susie, thank you so much for your time, as always. But before you shoot off, how can people who are not part of the World Class Programme find out more about Premier Global NASM?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, so basically, they can go onto our website, which is www.premierglobal.co.uk. Or more than happy them to contact me directly. So my email address is susie.bruff@premierglobal.co.uk.
That is fantastic. And for all those athletes who are listening, if you are really interested in becoming a PT or coming into the fitness world, then please contact your performance lifestyle practitioner. Thank you.